So last year, this competition occurred in Greece, and Africa came last.
I want to create solutions which help people.
Be this person I want to be in the future, I have to follow this path.
Seeing their lifestyle, you know, the type of lifestyle that I want.
Africa's bank accounts, paint your dreams.
Welcome to today's episode. Today, I'm joined by Blessing Kashava. How are you doing, Blessing?
I'm good. How are you, Audrey?
I'm good. How's your week been?
Not too bad. I hope yours has been okay.
Mine has been going well. So for the people who do not know you, can you do a self-introduction about yourself and what you're currently doing?
My name is Blessing Kashava. I'm a technology risk analyst at Baker Tilly Central Africa. This role basically entails penetration tests, vulnerability assessment, basically what you call ethical hacking in a nutshell. I'm also currently about to pursue my last year of college at the Harare Institute of Technology, studying information security and assurance. So yeah, that's basically about me in a nutshell.
So basically we can say cybersecurity specialist in the making, or you've actually started happening. That's something lovely, especially cybersecurity is the future we are going to. Everything is going digital and there's a very big need for people like that. So can you just give us your background, how you grew up, what happened, maybe some things you experienced in your background that you'd like to share?
I've always been a tech enthusiast ever since I was a kid, growing up in Hatfield, Harare, right? So even in kindergarten, my dad wouldn't allow me to do computers because I was already exposed to all of this. And I was like that one person who wanted to know it all per se. So yeah, started off at a very early stage, but my dream had always been to be a game developer because I was highly enthusiastic about video games. I was an addict, and well, I still am, but then with age you end up realizing that some things take up most of the time for you to be more productive than other things. So yeah, grew up in Hatfield, went to Whitcomb Primary School. High school I learned at St. Mary Magdalene's High, which is a mission high school in Inyanga. It's like a 4-hour drive away from Harare, like deep in the forest. So yeah, did my C form 1 to form 4, then I did basically most of the subjects that people in Zim do, even though I didn't like most of them, especially Shona. I literally failed Shona on my form 4. I felt like I was there mostly for the computers. Even when I was in high school, I used to fix people's computers. I used to do, you know, just cliche geek guy you would know. So yeah, fast forward, finished my high school. Also, you wanted to pursue game development, but then I couldn't. In Zim, you wouldn't get a degree program like that, even creative writing. I was also an enthusiastic content creator, also community builder. I was in the Leo Club for most of you that know the Leo Club. It focuses mostly on charity, giving to the needy and the less privileged. I was the club president in my A-level. So yeah, besides loving computer science, I also loved community. Fast forward, university, it was 2020, around the time that lockdown started. My wish was to get a scholarship and study out of Zimbabwe, but then, you know, things happen and here I am.
Wow, that's some lovely background, especially how you said you wanted to be a game developer. I think that's something we have in common. Something I am doing as a side project, like you said, you won't really find degrees which you say game developers in Zimbabwe. Then I like how you came to terms with that. It's not something that you regret not pursuing, but it's like you said, I can always do this in a later time, and it's not that rush. So how did you enter into cybersecurity, especially for someone who wanted to be game dev or content creator? How did you then become, say, oh, cybersecurity looks something along the lines I'd like to do?
Okay, so like you said, I still had the dream of wanting to become a game developer at a later stage, right? So the next best thing or the best alternative was software development. So I went on, started doing my applications for college, right? Applied at National University of Science and Tech, NAST. Also applied at UZ, then I applied at HIT, right? For all these, I was either applying for computer science or software engineering, because I figured, okay, game development, besides the creative side of things, there's also the development side of things. So if I maybe do my bachelor's in engineering, I would probably end up pursuing game dev in future. I was still overzealous, yes. And it's still a dream of mine. And I know at some point I would achieve that. Anyway, back to the main story. I applied for this. All of the colleges declined my application except for HIT. And even at HIT, I wasn't given the program I wanted. Instead, I was transferred to what they call information security and assurance. It's not called cybersecurity at HIT. They call it information security and assurance because it covers both the cybersecurity aspect from a physical state and also within the digital world or cyberspace. So yeah, I got this degree program, went to college for the first 2-3 weeks, because for some weird reason, this field wasn't and still hasn't been completely embraced within the country. So most people, even I, didn't know. I knew cybersecurity existed, right? But it wasn't one of those top of the mind type degree programs that I would like choose. And at that moment, only HIT offered cybersecurity as a degree program. So went through a bit of guidance and counseling, got to know more about cybersecurity and how you can actually learn cybersecurity through what they call gamified learning. So it sort of matched with my curiosity for gaming, even if it was a bit different. But then, yeah, as I went through the modules, the prerequisite modules for the program, I actually found it to be a bit intriguing. So yeah, that's how I started out, which was like 3 years ago.
Did you complain when you got that degree, or you just played the game which was given to you?
Actually, no. For some weird reason, I have the sentiment that in as much as you like something, one way or the other, you are pushed in the direction where you're supposed to go. So the moment I actually got cybersecurity, and it was like the main thing, like I said before, I also wanted to study outside of Zim, but then that didn't happen. Applying for a scholarship during the COVID era was like near impossible. So I felt like everything that happened, well, pushed me in a certain direction, and I didn't really complain. I just embraced it.
I love that mentality, that mindset, the growth mindset that you just really said, if there's something pushing me towards that direction, I think that's the right direction I'm supposed to go. Before we continue with your cybersecurity journey, I want you to just talk about HIT Evolve. I see that on your Twitter profile, you're the founder of HIT Evolve. Can you just explain to the people what is HIT Evolve and what is its mission?
Okay, a bit of background again, right? When I started off college, I was an enthusiastic community builder. I love creating community spaces for people to learn and everything. Like I said, especially within the Zim space, right? Within the Zim tech space, people mostly embrace, well, coding, programming, right? Web development, artificial intelligence, maybe cloud computing, all that. There were communities on my campus that covered all these things, but none of them spoke to people doing cybersecurity. No one cared. Well, a few did, but then no one actually had the vision of establishing a community. And besides all these like very immediate technologies that everyone has to embrace as a tech person, right? There were most of those marginalized and emerging new technologies, blockchain, Web3, AI, and cybersecurity essentially. So yeah, what I did, I was in my second year. I went to speak with my chairperson for cybersecurity at HIT, pitched him my idea. I'm like, sir, I have this vision, right? All other fields of technology, of IT, are covered, and they have communities, they have a huge support system. But within our university and in Zim generally, there is no club or community that covers cybersecurity mostly and all of the all these other emerging technologies. So yeah, they listened to my pitch. They argued at one point, they were like, maybe make cybersecurity a part of the clubs that already exist. Well, that could have been possible as well. But then I felt as if it's a broad field and there's a lot to learn from there. and not everyone would be interested in the field, so to speak. So yeah, that's when I ended up developing It Evolve. It started off really small with only like 10 people. Had to do marketing. At the very beginning, I was alone. I did the club constitution, the branding and everything. And then when it was a bit well established in a way, that's when I started recruiting other people. So yeah, it started off small, just at HIT locally. But then with time, people embraced it, people loved it. And at the moment, we're actually speaking of creating chapters within other universities in the country.
I love that initiative. You know how people, like you said, it was possible for you just to become a subcategory of another club, but you feel that if it becomes a sub, it gets undermined in those situations. So you're like, no, it has to stand for itself. So we can go back to your journey. Can you tell us some of the struggles you faced in your journey of cybersecurity and how you overcame them?
I would say the main thing, like I said before, there wasn't exactly like a proper support system for people who want to learn cybersecurity in general. You'd find that there were communities for other things, like I mentioned before, but then no one really spoke about cybersecurity. It's becoming less and less like that, but you'd find that people in development, people who like to program, people would like to, you could go on YouTube, literally, right now you could go on YouTube, right, and look for a course in Python programming, look for a course in C Sharp. You'd find that video with over 10 million likes, 10 million viewers. Look for cybersecurity courses. Look for people who do cybersecurity. Their pages won't have like maybe 10,000 followers. So it's one of those very low-key fields where you can only find information you need to learn it once you are deep into it and once you are very enthusiastic about it. I think one of the other struggles I faced was I actually thought cybersecurity was detached from these other technologies. Like, I wouldn't need prerequisite knowledge of programming. I wouldn't need prerequisite knowledge of maybe what you call it, networking and everything. But then with cybersecurity, you're supposed to have prerequisite knowledge of everything else because it's essentially breaking what's been made. So yeah, it's one of the many things that I faced as a beginner. But I think my breakthrough was me getting a job at Baker Tilly. They offer cybersecurity as a consultant service. So yeah, when I started out as a trainee, that's when I got my training was off and started off.
I love that what you said about support system. People really undermine a support system. And some people always think support system, someone means family and friends, but some things like you're just saying, you're pioneering into a field where no one really talks about anything. And it's more, very maybe it's the older guys who have been in cybersecurity for so long, who are they sharing the information, and it's not really accessible to everyone. So the breakthrough, like you said, when you got the job and then you meet people who are also in the same field who can guide you, who can mentor you into a right direction, then things did come a bit more easier. Like you said, you took over the training wheels and you're now able to move across, maybe not easily, but at least it was with less resistance.
Yeah, true.
We're going to get a bit more technical now, a bit more specific to cybersecurity. So this is a deep question which I found. And it says, what unique cybersecurity challenges do you see in Africa as compared to other regions of the world? Like in terms of Africa alone, what cybersecurity things do you see that affect Africa, but some other regions are not as affected?
One of my other roles, right? I am one of the 15 students to participate in the International Cybersecurity Championship next month in San Diego, USA. So this competition brings together students from other continents to essentially battle or compete against each other in different categories of cybersecurity generally. So last year, this competition occurred in Greece, and Africa came last. I wasn't part of the team as yet. Some of my other colleagues in the teams after me went and competed. So here's the thing. Before we go into the more technical things, right? How Zimbabwe is structured, not saying that the system is bad, but how things are structured. The average European or Asian kid doing cybersecurity could literally go on a whole week training in cybersecurity for like maybe 15 hours daily. And that person would be a pro hacker. that person would be a decent, like a very, very, very proficient hacker. Whereas compared to an average African kid, I wake up wanting to study. I don't have electricity for the first 10 hours of the day. On other occasions, I do have electricity, but then I don't have the Wi-Fi or the bundles to be able to connect to. Because with cybersecurity, how we train is based on vulnerable machines that are left intentionally vulnerable online. There are specific websites for this. You can't just randomly try and break systems that are made by people for companies and everything. The power is there, but you can't, well, it's illegal, right? There are specific platforms, and most of these platforms are online. The only way you can access them is through the internet. You can't be doing cybersecurity offline. The requirements are just too overwhelming. So what I would say is the main challenge within the African space is actually time. And, well, those are the very, very small resources that you might find insignificant for the average person who has their needs right. But for a person who can't afford a laptop, for a person who can't afford electricity, for a person who can't afford data, and also for a person who has other commitments, who doesn't have that self-motivation to study the field, it might be a bit overwhelming for you. And that's the main non-technical challenge. Otherwise, besides that, I see a lot of people thriving in this field from my workplace, right? From the time I was there, from the very beginning, in a span of 6 months, about 4 employees that do cybersecurity were taken by companies abroad, like all around the world, because these people were very good in the field. Like, they are proficient, they know what they're doing. So we have everything. We have the resources, we have the knowledge base, we have the expertise. We just don't have enough time to put in the motivation to put into learning cybersecurity. So yeah, I think that's the main challenge.
Thank you for your insights. I think most people who are listening to this can align with you, especially people who are in the tech industry or even other industries we may take for granted. It's mostly in African countries, it's just mostly time, which is bothering us. And most people some people do have the capacity to say, I want to learn something. But as you say, you wake up in the morning, there's no Zesa or there's no electricity and maybe other things that you need to cover to survive in your daily, for your daily bread. But otherwise, I think that is something that with time will come to pass as things stabilize and as African countries progress. And it's something we'll hope to see in the near future. Then as you move on again in that African countries topic, we now need to talk about collaboration, you know, between the African countries, you know. What collaboration effects can they do as African countries? What information can they share to help one another to maybe get to a stage where if you guys are to go to the competition and you guys are able to show your talents and actually have a chance to be in there, what do you guys need to do in terms of collaborations for you to be a successful team when you travel?
I think the main thing would actually be support in general, because with this field, right, you have a lot of things that you need to learn in a very short space of time. Even if you are employed by a company and they expect you to be a proficient ethical hacker, penetration tester, whatever, with each day you learn something new, and the only way you're able to adapt to that is if you collaborate with other people. And like you said, how best can African countries collaborate? Well, they already do, but just not within the cybersecurity space. I think the first step of collaboration is actually acknowledging that cybersecurity is becoming a rapidly evolving field, and even companies within the country haven't completely. You'd find that some companies actually trust a person that does network engineering or just development to also fill in the role of cybersecurity. They think of it as being that trivial. Of course, in retrospect, cybersecurity personnel especially in first world countries, are really expensive to hire. So they might put that as an argument that maybe you might not have enough money to pay the person. But then I feel like the first thing that African countries need to do is acknowledging that cybersecurity is here and it's here to stay. If you're following the news last month, National Foods, this local company, faced a cybersecurity attack and they lost 6 million. Not saying that they didn't have a security team, not saying that they didn't put in the effort, right? But then these cases are becoming more and more and more prevalent within Zimbabwe and within Africa in general. So I feel like what other countries are doing, what other first world countries are doing, right? Companies should put in the work and should put in the budget for people that focus, even with universities. In Zimbabwe at the moment, it was only HIT that offered cybersecurity. And then now the University of Zimbabwe also is also offering cybersecurity, right? We would expect that in the next maybe year or 2 years, all universities in Zimbabwe would offer cybersecurity as a degree program. And all other personnel doing maybe IT or computer science as a program would also be offered cybersecurity as a course within their degree program so that they at least have an appreciation, not just trivializing cybersecurity as if it's just something you can add on. You've, in analogy I like to use, you've set up everything. It's a dinner table. You've made the food, you've set up the whole table and everything. And then you forget that only forks are left for the meal to be complete. That's how cybersecurity is. It's just like an add-on, something that you wouldn't think of at the very beginning, but just like an add-on. I feel like it should be made to be one of the mainline programs to focus on within the African space for it to work.
Totally get you. And I feel like there's a lot of movements now, like you say, that was it. There's now UZAD, and I think in other African countries, they started the movement. I recently came across this program, Ingressive for Good, where they offer to give scholarships on cybersecurity through the Cisco Network Academy. And I see that the initiative is there. People have seen the need for cybersecurity now, and they have come to the agreement. Like you said, it's no more supposed to be something we think about last, but it's something that we're not doing the original plan. It has to be on the table saying we need to have these security measures to protect us. Because like you said, these hacking cases have become a bit too common now for our liking. People are losing money. People's information is getting stolen and being sold on the black markets and stuff like that. And it's something we need to not trivialize anymore, but make it something that we focus on the forefront. Then Blessing, I see that you... a man who's very focused. I see a man who's, like you said before, a community builder. Some of your credentials here is that I'm Microsoft Lens student ambassador and a GitHub campus expert. I think I met you through GitHub when I was also just scavenging the internet. Yeah. So can you tell us, you know, how those things have helped you advance in life? You know, something for a Zimbabwean Microsoft Lens student ambassador, when the people hear the name Microsoft, people usually say, ooh. You know, people are always like, oh, some kids right now growing up, they say my goal is to work at Google, at Microsoft. But for you to be having that titles of Microsoft Lens student ambassadors, what does that take you? How did you get there? How did you end up going all these, joining these communities? And how has joining the communities helped you and has helped you also give back to the community?
The Microsoft Lens student ambassador and the GitHub Campus Experts program are both student leadership programs funded by these Fortune 500 companies. The idea behind these communities was because Microsoft saw that students within universities, students within campuses around the world are enthusiastic about learning tech, but then they don't have the means to reach out to the proper companies. They also don't have access because with what's happening right now, right? People are embracing technology. Almost everyone has a laptop, almost everyone has a cell phone, right? But then these companies offer software that's very expensive. GitHub, you have to pay for GitHub to use GitHub. And GitHub at the moment is the place to be if you want to be like an open source developer. You want to be able to share your code with people around the world. You want to be able to, store your applications so that you can use them at a later stage without having to lose them, right? GitHub wants people to know about their products. Microsoft wants people to know about their products. They also want people to be able to afford these products. And it's not fair for students to be asked to pay for the pro version of applications that they don't use, like Visual Studio for coding or even Visual Studio Code. All these, well, VS Code is free and Visual Studio is also free if you use the community version, which has limited features, right? But the pro version of all these softwares is extremely expensive. But then by virtue of being a student, you can get most of these benefits and more for free just by virtue of, you know, being at an institute of higher learning. So how I started out, there was already like a Microsoft Learn Student Ambassador at HIT. I think he was the first in Zimbabwe, right? His name is Clint. He had his community. It had been around for like 2 years on campus. And I didn't know much about the program. I just went. We learned about cloud technologies. We learned about, well, Microsoft technologies in general. And I saw loopholes. One of the loopholes was, well, me and ending up establishing Heat Evolve, because they were focusing mostly on development. They were focusing on coding. I liked all those, but I also wanted cybersecurity. So before all that, I established my own community, Heat Evolve, focusing on cybersecurity. And then because I was enthusiastic about wanting to help people, Clint gave me like a reference. He referred me to the Microsoft people and said, nah, this guy is very enthusiastic about community building. He loves this. Can you give him a chance? Although besides the referral, I was also supposed to fill in my own form. It's overwhelming. The BSA questions, they also have, it's like applying for a proper scholarship. They also like have a video resume. They want to know what you've already done to be able to help the community before they give you the title Learn Student Ambassador, because it came with perks, obviously. So because I had already established Heat Evolve, this is what mostly helped me, because they saw that besides me having the cap from Microsoft, I was already like an enthusiastic community builder. I love doing this. I love helping out people, helping people learn. Not that I knew everything and not that I had most of the knowledge, right? But then I just loved this. So yeah, I applied for Microsoft. And at the same time, I noticed that GitHub had a similar program. But then there was no one in the whole of Southern Africa that was a part of this. I also applied for this, went through the same rigorous process, essay questions after essay questions, video resumes. For GitHub, I had no reference or anything. It was like straight up. So yeah, fast forward with GitHub, for the first application, I was actually rejected. I think it was before I had established Heat Evolve, before I had started content creation. I also write articles on occasion. They weren't really convinced that I help people out before they gave me this title. So yeah, fast forward, ended up getting both the caps. For GitHub, I was the first in Southern Africa. I was really happy about that. So yeah, at the moment, these programs help me to enable other students to use platforms and software that you would normally not be able to use, especially in Africa when things are expensive. You wouldn't expect the average person to pay for these kinds of softwares, but then you get other benefits as well from these programs. And the benefits that I get are basically mostly for the communities, to give back to them. So it helped me tremendously, because starting up communities in Zimbabwe on campuses is very hard, because students want to learn, but you don't convince them to learn without any incentive. Microsoft, GitHub, they found ways. They give out cheat sheets, they give out stickers, they give out magazines. They sometimes allow me to ask for an employee from Microsoft to give a talk, like a one-on-one session on Zoom. so that the students can speak and ask their questions. So as you can imagine, right, for an average person that you'd ask to join a community with nothing to gain from it, with these communities, it has some sort of weight. Tell a person that come for an event, there will be an employee from Microsoft who's going to speak. They'll feel motivated. Come to an event. We're offering food. We're offering stickers. People come to learn, but at the same time, they enjoy collaborating because they don't walk out with nothing. They walk out with knowledge, sometimes even certification vouchers, sometimes, you know, the works. That's mostly about.
Thank you, Blessing. I think a lot of people have been motivated for the things they've said to go far and beyond, join communities, make an effort. And for me personally, someone who's also doing my fair share of cybersecurity, I've also been motivated to go, I think, take it a bit more serious, give me more my time and learn more. So the question is, yeah, is what can we expect from you in the near future with the competition around the corner, with Hit Evolve, with you as a person in your career? What can we expect from you in the near future?
Okay, I'm that one person that almost always enjoys helping out other people. So yeah, with the competition coming up, at this point, I'm mostly doing my preparations, trying to, you know, figure out ways to enhance my skills and to, in as much as I know things, you sometimes have to do things with speed. So that's what I'm mostly focusing on. My skills, trying to give them up to for competition standard, because this is timed. The competition is like 3 days and you're supposed to get the most amount of points within those 3 days to be able to win. So yeah, for the competition, that's that. But then soon after the competition is done, at the moment, I'm in communication with people from different universities. I'm also looking out for other people that can help me share my vision for Hit Evolve. People that are willing to push the name, the brand, so that it becomes like a university-wide thing. I did, I hosted the Capture the Flag Challenge, right? This is similar to what I'll be doing during the competition. I hosted one Capture the Flag event at HIT. People were excited. The whole nation was excited. I wasn't expecting it, right? But on that specific day, the news crew came. We featured on the news. We featured in the newspapers. Articles were made about that very, very small cybersecurity-related event. So, yeah, people are excited about this, and I want to sort of, like, give back to them. So, expecting Hit Evolve to become bigger by the end of the year, I'm pretty sure we have chapters in many universities around the country. Even maybe reach out to high schools with time. I just hope that to work out. So yeah, I'll also be finishing up my final year. So a lot is going on, but I'm sure it will work out.
What words of encouragement can you give to the people who are listening? Maybe there's an African kid right there who's also aspiring to do so much. What words of encouragement can you give to those people? Some words of wisdom.
First and foremost, most of my advice is very cliche. It's stuff that you hear every day, but it's stuff that works. Never be demotivated by the next person, and don't rate your progress based on someone who's already in the field. I started out in cybersecurity about 2 years ago, right? When I started out, there were already people that had 20, 30 years. I joined LinkedIn, I joined Twitter, I also went to events, even on campus, even on a very, very, very small scale. I went to club. I went to clubs, to events, like at school, at tech-related events, tech-related communities. Someone has been doing this for 4 or 5 years. You don't expect to wake up and be like that person the next day. You have to put in the work. And you also have to understand that in the next 4 or 5 years, you might actually be better than that person. It's just that that person had the advantage of age and you still have all this time to get to where they are. So the main thing is run your own race, be in your own lane, focus on what you want to achieve, and also give it time. Don't expect to understand a concept with 2 days. If it doesn't make sense, wake up tomorrow, try again. Wake up the next day and try again until it works. And then is specifically within the field of cybersecurity. Try as much as possible, if you're a beginner, to just get an appreciation of all the other subdomains within the field. It's not just ethical hacking. I know hacking sounds fun, but it's not only ethical hacking that's in cybersecurity. We have a lot of other fields, digital forensics, IT audit, which is very, very, very less technical, right? People like this. People enjoy, some other people don't like technical things. Look at all the fields in cybersecurity and pick your poison. Just look for one path, follow that path. You can't know everything in one day. Just, you know, focus on your own race.
So thank you for those wise words, Blessing. So the last thing is just, can you give us your socials where people can find you and contact you maybe for maybe more information or joining programs and stuff like that?
Find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn with my full name, Blessing Mufaru Kashala. So for Twitter, it's Blessing Mufaru or even the full name. It won't be hard to find. And if you find my Twitter account, there's a link tree with all my other socials. So yeah, it's pretty easy.
Thank you for being on the podcast, Blessing. It was lovely to have a conversation with you about cybersecurity in Africa, your journey. It has motivated a lot of people. I know that it's going to motivate a lot of people. It has motivated me especially. And again, just want to thank you for your time, for being with us today.
Thank you for hosting me, Audrey. Thank you for this amazing opportunity.